My name's Billy Aminati. I've been clean and recovering exclusively in NAA since December 30th of 1985. My voice is a little gone, man. My whole trip and my whole experience, you know, getting clean and being here is just like one continuous miracle. And I had another one on Friday night. I got a number of life-threatening illnesses going on. You know, stuff that I'm not going to recover from. But spent Friday night in the emergency room. You know, I couldn't breathe, and you know, I was in a giant panic attack and all that. But you know, I prayed and talked to my sponsor, and he told me what to do. Get your ass in the emergency room. I did. They fixed me up. Here I am, you know. My voice is a little weird, but I know you can hear me. But like I say, I'm not here for much of anything I did except just show up. And when I came to my first number of meetings, I didn't come here to get recovery. I didn't come here to get clean. And I came because it was the middle of winter. I was living in a stolen car. And I showed up for coffee and donuts. And for the first time in years and years and years, people were glad to see me. I mean, they were genuinely glad to see me. You know, I got hugs and, you know, like, keep coming back. They couldn't do enough for me, you know. You know, fed me, clothed me, took me home a couple times a week, you know, let me sleep on the couch when it was zero, all that. And that was, you know, the way I looked at it, these guys were really taking a chance. Because I was, like, down as low as I could possibly get anyway, you know. I was on emergency red alert number 3, you know, there is only 4, and the 4th one's death, you know. But we're talking about spirituality here this morning, and my view of spirituality has changed a lot over the 22 and a half years I've been here. At first it was, what could you do for me, you know, and I couldn't come out and ask you for anything. You know, like after meetings, I'd go stand outside Eaton Park. Everybody went to Eaton Park after the meetings. And I'd stand there and everybody would come by. And, hey, you coming in, man? Come on in. Let me get you something to eat, you know. No, I'm okay. And I'd wait for that one guy that was, that I thought that was, you know, a sucker and I could hustle him. I didn't realize that what these people wanted to do was just help me, you know. And I didn't really understand that for years and years here. You know, for the longest time, it was all about me. You know, although I was really schooled in what to do to stay clean, what to do, you know, like just keep showing up and get involved and, you know, get on committees and stuff like that. But still early on, it was all about me. You know, 12 steps was after having had a spiritual awakening. As a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message and to practice of these principles in all our affairs. And what recovery has been for me is learning how to do that. And along with learning how to do that, taking a real good look at myself, I'm able to live that life now. And I have gained a really good understanding about what spirituality is all about. It's not about me. It's about us. It's not about what can you do for me. It's about what can we do for each other. What can I do for you? And but I had to learn, you know, how to give back. And I was taught by a whole bunch of good people. I've been like lucky and fortunate enough to hang with some people from different periods of time, you know, guys that started this fellowship up, guys that wrote the basic text and all that, They were real patient with me. I'd sit, you know, down by the river or up at Eaton Park until 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, and I'd try to talk, you know, I'd try to tell those war stories and try to tell guys what I thought and all that, you know, and everything, and they were real patient with me, but they just keep talking, you know, and just shut me up. And after a while, at first, I had to learn how to listen. And this was all by suggestion of my sponsor and these guys I'm talking about. I said, well, you know, like, how could I do that when my mind's going like 50 million miles an hour? And they said, you got to pray and ask God to help you with that. So I did. And after a while, you know, like, I learned how to listen. But I wasn't hearing nothing. You know, so I prayed and asked God, if he could, help me to be able to hear. And God helped me to be able to hear. All this happened like while I was working the steps. I remember my second Tri-State Convention. I was on the committee and everything, it got down to like Saturday morning, and I showed up at the hotel really early, and I really didn't want to be there. You know, I was real self-conscious and real critical of myself, and thought everybody else thought I was this big idiot and all that stuff at that time. And I asked the vice chair, he just come walking out, you know, it was me and him standing there, and I said, man, I don't want to be here, you know, I'm just going to go home. You know, I just don't want to be here. He said, listen, I'm going to give you a suggestion. It's up to you to do it. But go stand there by the elevator. And the first 100 people would get off that elevator, you had to take the elevator to the second floor, you know, into the main lobby where the convention was. He says, I want you to, stand by the lobby and hug the first 100 people and get off that elevator, and you'll be okay. So I did that. And as each hug went along, I got better and better and better. And everybody was really, really, for some reason, they were really glad to see me. And was glad I was there and all that. But about the third guy that got off the elevator was this guy from Kentucky, and his name was Phil. And he weighed about 50 more pounds than I do. But he had a white beard and long white hair and everything, you know, so I was able to, zero in on him right away. And throughout the whole convention, I kept seeing this guy, and he'd walk up to me with this really nice, calm smile on his face. He was, like, really calm, really serene, as we say it. How you doing? Hi, I'm doing great, man. And we'd talk a little bit, and he didn't really make any suggestions, but it was just his manner and just the way the guy was that you know, way down inside, I really wanted that. And so coming along to a spiritual speaker on Sunday morning, you know, I walked into the Sunday morning brunch and got my stuff, and all the tables were filled up at one. He was sitting there by himself. And, you know, so I walked over and I sat down with him, and we talked a little bit and all that, and somebody gave me a reading, you know, the 12 traditions, and I got up there, my knees were knocking and stuff. I sat back down again, and they introduced the speaker, and here it was him. Man, excuse me, was I able to zero in on that, you know, I mean, that was like one of those gifts I'm talking about that I've gotten along the way. And that stuff's happened to me over a lot here, and I know now it's only because, you know, after a little while, I really wanted this. You know, I was tired of being that person that I used to be. You know, I was at that point where I could really see who I really was. And that's what recovery's been for me. Like, it opened up to my mind and my spirit and my heart. You know, and I didn't do it myself. It just, you know, it was a series of gifts and, you know, like awakenings from God. You know, adding up into one big awakening. And so anyway, he spoke and I just sat there and cried the whole time. I saw a thing on TV, and I think it was Friday night. After I got home from the emergency room, and I turned on the TV and laid down in bed, and I was really sick. this program come on, and what it was these guys were out in space on a planet, and it was like a crew of guys on a space trip, and one guy was the like the chief engineer or scientist or whatever, and he got infected by this this parasite inside his brain. And his personality before that was this guy that he was real smart ass and was always correcting everybody, and he knew everything, and wouldn't hesitate to cut in on you and tell you you're wrong about stuff. This is the way it really is, and all that. Real smart ass. And I could really, I'm laying there fighting, I could really see that I was just like this guy, But these people, the other crew members, they've been together for a long time. They just, no matter what he ever said to them, they just loved them. They just kept loving them. And they were all really concerned because he was sick. Just like people have been for me here. No matter what happens with me, people really care about me. And that's one of the main attractions, being here in recovery, is for the first time in my life, people really care about me. My mother and father, my three wives, all my best friends, they never cared about me like this before. And anyway, so they just kind of led them back from health and performed this operation that this thing would explode if they weren't real careful, take it out of his head and all that kind of stuff, but they did it anyway. And then he came back to life again. He wasn't really changed all that much, but he did change a lot, in that particular episode anyway. It really reminded me of me and what my journey's been like here, no matter what I've said to people. And I used to test people, really jack them off and stuff, and they didn't quit loving me, They'd keep coming back, though, it'll be all right, I didn't know what they were talking about, because I was that guy. My whole life, I thought I was smarter than everybody. I thought I was cooler than everybody. And I'd do things, I'd perform like these far out things, I was the first guy to try anything, Hey, let's give it to Billy, he'll do anything, But I've learned a lot, since I've been here. I've learned how to love people, and I've learned how to help people. I've learned to not expect anything from anybody either. That's the hard part, when you really start caring. That's one of the things that happens to us in recovery, With that spiritual awakening we're talking about, we start really caring about people, no matter who they are. And it's like the sicker they are, the more we start caring, the more we try to help them. But the hard part is not having any expectations. When they go out and get high again or do something really screwed up, we get really hurt and all that, but the main thing is not to give up, because nobody gave up on me. And I did some really stupid stuff along the way. It's like I was on the merchandising committee for the convention, and my job that whole year was going around to every event that NA had in the region, going to dances and picnics and everything, and taking the merchandise around and selling it. Well, against everybody's suggestion, I was in a relationship, and I would, just like the drugs, I would do anything to make this girl want to be with me, and I guess love me and all that. So I gave her we had about 35 different kinds of shirts and all kinds of stuff. And along the way, I gave her one of each. Then at the end of all of that, it came time for me to settle up, I was short, like I don't know how many shirts, 35 or something like that. And I had to go make amends to the board of directors and everything, and specifically to the guy that was in charge of all that, and pay it all back, I learned a real good lesson, But the lesson, actually I learned two lessons. I learned a lot about codependency and all that stuff. And about relationships, about myself in relationship, but also, learning something else, that these people trusted me, with all that merchandise and stuff, and I really had to make it up. I made the amends and I paid it all back. And they were happy as a lark with me. Not because I paid it back, but because I wanted to, because I was learning. Yeah? And that didn't mean, you know, they trusted me or anything. They just kept giving me more responsibility because I kept seeing that I really wanted this, and I really wanted to learn, I really wanted to change. And I had to go through these changes to do it. You know, learn these lessons. That's what the steps for me have been all about, you know. I wrote a huge fourth step. And then an equally big fifth, and then my sponsor and I really dug in on sixth. And I wrote about individually about every character defect, and they gave me a whole bunch of other stuff to write on. And then shared it just like I did another fifth step. And I'll never forget when I was real eager to get to the steps, but he, took it real slow with me. I remember when he put me on seven after a year and a half of concentrating on six. And we got on our knees in this filthy bathroom at Rove Street and, Pittsburgh Friday night meeting and said the seven step prayer, man. And I felt something right then and there, man, just a wave come over me. But with each, in the progression of each step, I could feel myself growing and everything. And, it's raining out, isn't that nice? But, with each step, my recovery was all in retrospect, looking back on it. But something down inside, though, I couldn't talk about it, and I couldn't admit it to anybody because I was like real sheepish about having a spiritual awakening. But I knew it was happening, And I'm the kind of guy that I was on a spiritual trip even when I was a little kid. I wanted, spirituality. I wanted to, understand what was going on. I wanted to understand myself and other people and what went on in the world and everything. I really went after that, around the world looking for, the dust of the Grand Wazoo. I took that trip. And, I found it a bunch of times, too, and I'd find myself, on my knees somewhere in some dark alley or something, or, some deserted beach, going, "Oh, God, please, I'll never do this again, man. I'd get so messed up, And I knew deep down inside that wasn't the way. But certain people along the way kept telling me, "You got to look inside yourself, man. You really got to just look deep inside yourself if you want to really understand." And that's what we do here, At first, it seems like different stages of our recovery, we check everybody else out, We take everybody else's inventory. And, I did that a lot. But, after a while, I started being able to relate to it and being able to understand that I was checking myself out, because we're all alike here, We all have had the same feelings. We all look at things the same way. We have the same disease. No matter where you come from or what you do. And this sucker's complicated. The disease is complicated. And I found out that's why, I kept being told to keep it simple and take it easy and all that stuff. Because I'm never going to stop learning about this, I got involved in treatment for about 15 years. And the main reason I did wasn't really for the money or the job. Although for about 5 years, I was the highest paid drug and alcohol counselor therapist in Pennsylvania. Because I'd worked more than one job at a time and get federal government contracts. And, we did a whole lot of stuff. Getting recovery started. And we started up the Pittsburgh Recovery Center. And we were getting people off the street, hundreds of them, and getting them clean and into rehab and stuff. Introducing them to meetings and all that. And we really, we were rolling, man. But this one job that I had federal funding to do whatever I wanted to do, whatever I saw was fit. So I just go to people on the street, pick them to detox, pick them up there, get them in a halfway house, for a while, help them find a job, help them find a place to live, do the whole route with them. And the rewards were incredible, especially a couple of years later, I'd be walking down the street or a meeting, somebody would walk up to me and they'd be vaguely familiar, They'd say, "Billy, don't you remember me?" "Yeah." And they'd say, "You really helped me out along the way here. I really got to thank you, man." And my whole response to that is I just start crying, you know. You okay, man? Yeah, I'm fine, yeah. But one of the big blessings in recovery here is being able to feel this, you know. It's like I still like start crying at the drop of the hat. It's because of the gift that God's given me, this gift of recovery. You know, this spiritual awakening, if you want to call it that. And like I said, I used to be ashamed, or not really ashamed, but bashful about talking about it, but I'm not anymore. See, because we can all have this. It's, you know, I found out early on, and I was told that you can take this as far as you want to, Billy. You can have as much or as little as you want of the spiritual life. You know, you can just come here and stay clean, and that's fine. You know, you can go on and on and on with it. And I've chosen to go as far as I can go with it. You know, it's just incredible the clarity of the way I'm able to see things now. And I'm sure, I ask my sponsor and some other guys all the time. I walk up to them and ask them, hey man, is there more? And they just smile and nod their head, yeah, there's always more, man. I got this sponsor now, he doesn't talk down to me. He doesn't, you know, we're friends. And he just tells me I'm doing great. You know, and if I have a question, he'll answer it to the best of his ability and reassure me that I'm on the right track and everything. He doesn't criticize me or anything. He loves me, man. You know, I was, last week I was like, feeling a little bit weird about coming here and sharing today. I haven't had to take some serious medication. It really whacked me out and everything. And he said, Billy, if any of these people experience what you experienced in recovery with sickness and stay alive as long as you have with all of that and stay in recovery, man, and just work on through that stuff, they'll be really fortunate. Don't let anybody tell you that you shouldn't be up there sharing that with them. You know, and here I am, you know. I'll be 67 in a week. And it's a miracle of me, man. Because I was dead at 44 when I got to this program. I was literally dead, weighed 120 pounds, you know. I guess the expression is, been strung out like a research monkey for about 25 years. You know, and I didn't know anything else, man. You know, everybody that I knew, even the dealers that wanted my money by that time, I'd go down the street in the set with money in my hand, and they'd go the other way, man. They didn't want to get any deals with me, because they didn't know what I was going to do, you know. They didn't know if I was going to pull out a gun, or just grab the dope and run, or whatever, you know. But my favorite was buying all of the dope. Just cornering all of it when I could, you know. And they had to come to me. And we go through all sorts of changes, you know, and I'd have fun, you know, being, you know, we're all control freaks, but I really carried it to the limit, you know. Indian doing Space Ranger! And the Wonder Dog Shadoobie. See, Shadoobie's here with me today, you know. That's like my alter ego, you know, the thing. But this guy Bill from Kentucky, never saw him again, you know, but he was like, one of the most beautiful human beings I've ever met. I mean, this guy was beautiful. Just being next to him, you know, it was like calmed me down and made me feel beautiful. And what he talked about that day was he went through all the steps, you know, at length, you know, and talked about them, you know. And he talked about taking a personal inventory all day long, every day, you know, which is trying to do the right thing, the next right thing. You know, I do that. You know, I catch myself all the time trying to hustle people and stuff. I'm not cured. You know, I'm really not. But it's, I'm down to a real low, with that stuff, you know. I don't know if that'll ever change completely. You know, they tell me, keep on going, you know. But, stranger things have happened here than that. So I just keep on going with this. You know, praying for God's will for me and the power to carry that out. I've gotten real good at meditating, you know, letting all my thoughts go and you know, letting God's grace come in and all that. I've gotten real good at that, you know, at any time. That's what helps me more than anything, is, you know, being able to quiet down. And, you know, I was, when I was in detox, the only hospital detox I ever went to, because, you know, before I came here, I never knew that there was a hospital detox. I never knew that there were, I'd never heard of NA until I went to my first meeting. You know, an old friend of mine took me. His name was Tommy Collins. He's dead now, but it was a winter day out, you know, in December, it was zero out, and I got this stolen car I'm living in, and, you know, all this stuff living out on the turnpike at night, coming into the city during the day. And I left my dad on his deathbed, you know, like in August, I think it was. And I left and stole his car and took it, you know, just stole his car and stole his checkbook. He was on his deathbed. And, you know, proceeded to do what I was going to do. I was writing checks every day and signing his name. And I was real good at forgery, man. You couldn't tell, nobody could tell the difference. And, you know, he and the bank let me do that for about a month after that. And then they cut me off. But I still had the car, you know. But come Christmas time, holidays were always like real important to me. I realized now they were so important because I always had a bummer. Holidays were always a bummer, man. I was always looking for that movie, that TV holiday, you know. And I never had it, man. I had it when I was a little kid a few times. But, so I'd always get real bummed out, messed up on holidays. Well, come around Christmas '85, right before Christmas, I took a shot and wrote a check for $500 and took it in his bank. And they made a bunch of, you know, I handed him the check, and the lady behind the counter took it back to the assistant manager and made a bunch of phone calls. And I guess my dad said, give it to him. They went out and bought, you know, everything I could for $500. And that really wasn't enough. I got really high, but it just wasn't enough to you know, chill my feelings anymore and you know, wanting to die and all that. And I had a couple different ways I wanted to commit suicide. One of them was I was known as Indian Billy for years, and I always wore this, dressed up like an Indian, you know, like a mountain man or something. And was well known, sort of. So I go to the boat in front of a bank at Shadyside, you know, and you know, this is early in the morning. And I had my finest Indian Billy outfit on, you know, beaded buckskin shirt and all that. Strapped on my six gun and sat there, you know, like really getting myself together. And I still had a bunch of drugs left, you know. And while I'm sitting there, I'm doing drugs like a maniac. And I got real high and everything. But I was trying to commit suicide because what I was going to do is walk in the bank, blow a couple of rounds in the air and yell, hold him up, or stick him up, you know, and hope that the police come and shot me down before I get out of there. And if not, I'd get all the money and get out of there and, you know, just keep on going. But I really wished that somebody would just kill me by that point, because life, there was nothing there anymore, you know, except doing what I was doing every day. And not having anybody to talk to, not having anybody caring about me, you know. So I ran out of drugs. Okay, it's time to go in there, you know. So I'm sitting there in the car and saying, I was fucked up. And but still in my head, you know, physically messed up, still in my head. I wasn't ready to do that yet. Yeah, all of a sudden I remembered in my glove compartment, a buddy of mine, I was out trying to bump some pounds of hash to sell off him about 2 weeks before that, and he wouldn't front to me anymore. I mean, the guy loved me, and, you know, as a friend still, and, you know, let me in his farmhouse and, you know, in his kitchen, and sat and drank coffee and ate sandwiches and stuff for about 3 hours while I tried to talk him into, you know, fronting me his hash. And finally he said, well, I got stuff to do, man, you gotta go now. And I said, okay. And I start to get up to go out, and he says, hold on 1 minute. He goes to this refrigerator in the freezer and digging around in there, and comes out wrapped in plastic, these two little orange hits of orange sunshine acid. because we're a big acid freaks together. And he says, when you really want to get high, take these are the original ones from about 20 years ago. Yeah, far out, put them in my pocket, got in a car, threw them in a glove compartment. I remember that they were in there, so I dug them out, took those 2 hits of acid and sat there for I don't know how long, and all of a sudden sprung, you know, okay, I'm ready. I get out of the car, man, I'm hitching up my pants, adjusting like that. And see, the people in Shadyside didn't think that was, when, you know, that was crazy at all. It was just Billy, you know. And I don't know how long I stood there by the car, you know, doing all that, making sure I was looking good and everything. Walked up to the door of the bank. Bank was closed. I just stood there for how long I'm befuddled by. So finally there was nothing left to do but get back in the car and drive out to the turnpike where I've been living. You know, I'd just go out in the turnpike and pull over to the side and just sit there all night, you know. And I kept thinking about Tommy. He was a close street friend of mine for years. But I hadn't seen him in a couple of years or maybe 2.5 years, something like that. But I kept thinking about him. I knew where he lived, but I hadn't seen him on the street at all or anything. So I guess it was Christmas morning. I just, you know, I woke up and I'm thinking of him like crazy. And I'm totally out of drugs, and I just didn't have any more heart to hustle or anything. I just wasn't feeling nothing. For some reason, you know, it's like God, you know, put his hand underneath me and took me down to Tommy's house. And when I pulled up, you know, to his garage apartment, he and his lady, Ida, they were just coming out of the garage apartment. He had, just a few months before that, he had bought a house down in Lawrenceville, you know, a new house. And I didn't know he'd been in recovery either. I didn't know anything about that. I'd never heard of NA. And he's just walking out of the door of the house, and I can pull him up in the car and roll down the window. Hey, Tommy. Hey, man, can I talk to you for a minute? And he got one look at me. They were real happy walking out, you know, their new life and everything. He got one look at me, and we went from happy to like that. I mean, it was like picturesque. And yeah, Billy, what do you want? I said, Tommy, I'm real sick, man. I said, can I like lay down in your basement, you know, for 3 or 4 days, man? I got a really bad Jones, man. You know, until I'm feeling a little bit better, I can go out and get it together again. And he was silent for a minute. And he said, no, man. He said, I'm not into that stuff anymore. And then he put it on a meeting list and handed me through the window of the car and said, here, go to 3 meetings and call up detox at St. Francis and, you know, you have to do that to get in and they'll take you in. You know, it's a place where drug addicts like you and me can go and, you know, get off the drugs and stuff. I had no idea what he was talking about. St. Francis was a crazy hospital. I left my mother up in there for about a year when I was 10. You know what I mean? She had a nervous breakdown and stuff. Although, at the time, I thought that's what happened. But my mother did drugs before I was born. I was loaded before I was born. And she did drugs her whole life, prescription drugs. I mean, you wouldn't know. If you weren't in a family, you wouldn't know that because they were like these real staunch Republican, really well-liked people and all that. You know, but I knew because they gave me drugs my whole life. If I wasn't feeling good, they'd give me something for it. If I was feeling too good, they'd give me something for that too. And if I was just feeling okay, they'd give me something for that too, you know. You know, I learned how to tiptoe the medicine cabinet and take this cough syrup out and, you know, guzzle some Don. You know, I'm talking like, you know, preschool and you know, grade school and stuff. And it would make me like Superman, you know. I'd go out and play this game. I'd play Bombs Away. And I'd go hide in a tree with a car battery. And the first kid to come along walked underneath the tree, Bombs Away! I put some kids in the hospital, man. It was sick. It was really sick. But anyway, enough of that. But yeah, Tommy takes the meeting list back off. I said, what are you kidding, man? I'm not crazy. He takes the meeting list back off of me and takes out a pen and circles 3 meetings, one for that night, in the, you know, the next 2 days. He said, here, meet me at these meetings. The address is on there and the time and everything. And I'll help you get into detox, you know. I said, Tommy, man, don't you understand? I'm sick now, man. I got nothing. You know, what am I going to do for 3 days? He said, boy, how long have you been getting loaded? I said, my whole life, man. He says, you keep it together for 3 more days. And he was right, I did. But anyway, I did what I had to do that day. And I'm sitting on the corner on the shady side in the car, all bummed, I mean, really depressed, bummed out, you know, hating the fact that I had to go out to the turnpike, you know, and hide. And I remember my episode with Tommy that morning, and I looked over at the meeting, this is laying on the floor. So I picked it up and I unraveled it and looked, and Moon was just up there in Squirrel Hill, you know, Saturday night Squirrel Hill. And I drove up there and sat across the street, watched all these people going in. They didn't look like any drug addicts I knew. They were all happy and hugging each other and dressed real nice, and you know, but I waited until everybody had gone in and stuff, and got out of the car and walked down the driveway and down into the basement where they went, and there was glass in the window, and I'm looking in the glass and didn't see anybody I knew, but I opened up the door and stuck my head in. 2 or 3 people from across the road, Billy, Indian Billy, get in here, man. My God, we thought you were dead. And they all like hugged me and loved me, brought me, sat me down, brought me coffee and donuts and stuff. And see, that was a big lesson for me later on, how to help people. You know, I help newcomers when they come here. Like, let them know you love them. Let them know you care. I mean, really let them know. That's the whole reason I'm here. Without that, on a continuing basis, I don't think I'd stick around here, man. You know, I really don't. My issues have issues on my issues, you know. When you talk about fear of abandonment, man, I still have it. I get crazy if certain people don't call me every day. I tell them about it, too. I will. You know, if you know that I'm sick and you don't call me, boy, I get like, oh man, you know, they don't care anymore. I know better. See, in my heart and in my mind, I know better. But this shit is devastating that we have. It really is. And that's all part of addiction, man. Don't think it's not. You know, we didn't use all those drugs because we like getting high. That's the first time I ever heard that. That's the truth. I didn't use drugs because I liked them or liked to get high. I had myself convinced that I did. But I know now that's not true. You know, I tried to cover all that stuff up and it worked for a long time. I took drugs because I could go in anywhere and be a center of attention and all that and direct thousands of people and stuff, you know, put on rock concerts and stuff. You know, that's why I got high, because it really opened me up. But after a while, it just quit working, you know. And it really didn't work at all at the end of it. You know, I couldn't get high enough. I just could not get high enough. But, you know, coming here for 22 years and paying attention and following suggestions, whether I thought it was valid or not, no matter what suggestion you made to me, I could always think of a better way to do something. You know? But something down deep inside of me knew that you guys knew and I didn't. And I would talk out loud to myself, Billy, just do it, man. Early on, I was given the best prayer that I have, and I use it every day. And that's, God, please tell Billy to shut up and leave me alone, man. Because my thinking is really my worst enemy, you know? I mean, you can tell me it's Tuesday, you know, and I'll swear that it's Saturday, and I'll convince you of it, you know? You'll be walking away talking to yourself. Try me someday, you know? Challenge me. But you have to work it through the steps and spend a long time at it and doing it all day long, every day and everything. I know what God's will for me is and what God's will is for all of us. And that's to practice these principles, to live this life, and to help other people, you know, to give them this gift that we were given so freely. Yeah? That's what we're here for. That's why God brought us clean. You know? And if I don't help somebody, God always sends me the craziest, sickest. Oh, man. There's this one guy that I grew up with. You know, I grew up with this guy. And he's an addict and all that. He's got the addiction. There's also severely mentally ill man. And God sent put the two of us together. He was one of the guys that was in the first meeting when I started going. Made a big impression on me. All of a sudden, he could talk to people. You know, when I'd seen him before, we'd go to the street and try to have a conversation with this guy. And he'd say two or three sentences, and none of the words that he said in these sentences, none of the words belonged in the same sentence together. You know? But for some reason, I understood him. Nobody else did, but I did. You know? I mean, he'd take his, while he was talking to him, he'd take his belt off, wrap it around his hand, you know, with the buckle sticking out, you know, like he was going to, like, let me have it. And all I'd have to do is just look him in the eye and say, Jeff, it's Billy, man. And he'd go, oh, okay. He put his belt back on. And this guy, but I mean, he's in recovery right now. And it was here before I got here. And he was a serious inspiration for me. But he still goes off, you know, like on Crazy Johnson stuff. But I know what God wants me to do is he wants me to stay, to stick with this guy no matter what. Because he keeps telling me he loves me, and I know he does. And I really love this guy. I mean, you know, anybody that can come as far as he's come, you know, I'm telling you, this has been an experience. That's the kind of people God sends me. It's like when I was working in the field, that's what my supervisors gave me. You know, they gave me serial killers and people I got to work with, you know. For some strange reason, that was a gift. I was able to help them, you know, they responded to me. And I didn't know why or anything, but I just kept on going with it. And what I used in helping people wasn't what they taught me professionally. I mean, they taught me, you know, symptoms and stuff like that. But what I used is the same thing I used helping any newcomer. And that's what you people taught me how to help people. And the only way I know how to help people is how you help me. Anything else I might do is bullshit. You know, you taught me about experience, strength, and help. And the only way I had to help anybody was my experience, strength, and help. And anything else I try to tell you is bullshit. You know? And I found out that that's really true by trying to do it the other way, to experiment and make stuff up and stuff like that. And all that happened is I'd feel like totally stupid, totally guilty. You know, I don't know how the person would feel that I was telling that stuff to, but I'd feel like really terrible, man, when I do that because I knew that you guys were right. And that's why we're supposed to do that. And that's the NA way. You know, experience, strength, and hope. How do I live this, man? I just constantly think about it all day long, you know. My prayers in the morning, or I go through the steps, I have a prayer. There's a prayer right in the book for a lot of the steps, but I have my own lengthy prayer. That's the first thing I do every morning, is I say my prayers and get up off my knees, and whatever happens after that, I try to do the next right thing consciously. When I catch myself not doing that, you know, immediately, you know, if I'm talking to somebody or something, I immediately make amends with them right then and there. Wait a minute, I'm full of shit, man. I'm going off on them. You know, that's the only way I can stay straight. You know, because I'm tired of being crazy. You know, I'm really tired of it, man. It's, you know, it's not the, I guess it's no way to live and all that, but, man, do I hate myself when I, you know, live like I used to live, you know, like living dirty, so to speak. You know, and I'm like everybody else. I'll go off on little tangents once in a while. Excuse me. But, you know, I'm here. Totally God's grace. Because I've died half a dozen times. Literally died in recovery, you know, like in the hospital and stuff. You know, with different little physical afflictions I picked up along the way. I'm mainly now living off a dialysis machine, man. And boys, that knocked the shit out of you. Ooh. I mean, I feel really good when I walk out of that clinic. Every time I have dialysis, I feel really clean, you know. Clean, you know, of toxins and stuff. But if I'm not home, like, an hour and a half to 2 hours after my treatment, man, it's like, I gotta be home because I'm gonna collapse. And I'm going to be collapsed and not be able to hardly move for like 24 hours after that, you know. And at first it was really hard, but then I realized, wait a minute, I should be grateful for this, man. You know, the state of Pennsylvania is keeping me alive, and all I have to do is show up. It's just like recovery. All I got to do is show up. You know, every time I walk in the door of that clinic, it costs the state of Pennsylvania and the federal government $1,500. Can you imagine that? They started me off at 3 days a week, and they want me to do 3 days a week now, but I can't take 3 days a week. So I do two, and I'm getting along fine. All my blood tests and everything come back great, you know. And for the last couple of months, little by little, I've been feeling like weaker and weaker and weaker. You know, hardly able to stand up, you know, like getting dizzy and passing out sometimes and stuff. And I'm telling myself and anybody who listens, man, you know, like Sanford and someone too, you know, I'm coming to join you, Elizabeth. I'm bringing my dialysis machine with me, you know. And way down deep inside, I knew that there was something else going on, because I've had bad lungs for years and years. And that, my lungs had tried to kill me like 4 or 5 times. And all I had to do was like call up my doctor and tell him the symptoms and what should I do. Get the emergency room, we'll take care of you. So I went to the emergency room Friday night, and they gave me a couple of different breathing treatments, wrote me some prescriptions, you know, antibiotics and some steroids and stuff. And man, I feel great. Compared to what I was feeling, I feel great. I could stand here, man. I couldn't stand anywhere for 5 minutes the last couple of months. I mean, I just, you know, I was weak, and I didn't even need to bring my pillow in with me. You know, it's a matter of habit now, because dialysis took 60 pounds off of me, man. I weighed 200 when I started dialysis. I'm 140 now. And I looked the same at 200 as 140. I was in good shape and everything. But I'm so skinny, man. I look like something out of the Nazi death camp or something. You know, I got to laugh at that too and just be grateful I'm still alive. Because it's truly a gift from God, man. And I didn't do nothing to get it, you know, except be Billy. And you guys and the steps and God taught me how to do that, you know. Because if I was still that old guy, I don't think that I'd be standing here. In fact, I know I wouldn't be. You know, and it's the same thing with spirituality, gratitude, it's all the same stuff. You know, I had to learn about gratitude. You know, my first attempt at gratitude was, you know, like with, 6 months or a year clean, saying to everybody I went to, my name is Billy, I'm a grateful recovering addict, everybody would chuckle, you know. You know, I had to learn about what gratitude is really about. You know, it's about giving back more than I receive. You know, it's about showing my gratitude, not just saying it, not just acting like it, and talking it up real good, you know. And like I said, you know, when you get to a certain point in recovery where you really have worked through the steps and you're living this life, you know, we have a responsibility here, big responsibility, and that's giving back what we've got here, giving back what we've learned here, giving back how we learned how to do this and how we came to the spiritual awakening, and let, you know, really help people understand that it's really possible. You know, and all they got to do is show up and follow some simple directions. It talks about in the first step that how does it say that surrender is following these few simple suggestions. That's what surrender is all about. It's that simple. You know, but addicts, we complicate everything. Why? Well, my wife doesn't want me going to so many meetings. Well, just tell your wife, if you don't go to all these meetings, you know, you're not going to be around much longer. You won't be like I was then or like I am now. You know, it's real simple. You know, all this stuff is really simple. We just got to stick around long enough to hear these things a couple million times until they sink in. They sink in from up here down into here. You know? And I think my voice is giving out. So I really appreciate you guys. I always wanted to be a spiritual speaker, you know. People say to me a lot that they like hearing me share and stuff. And I'm just giving you my experience, strength, and hope. It's nothing special. I'm no rock star or nothing. You know, I never felt that way. You know, because I know that I'm really fortunate. gonna be standing here today, and probably tomorrow too, you know? And I'd be a fool to give this up. I mean, I'd give a fool, because I feel so good. You know, I used to hate people saying, you know, I've been blessed, but man, have I been blessed. Who? I sit every night, man, and I'll sit there at some point in the evening, I'll just sit there and start crying, you know, just thinking about this stuff. Especially after I get through talking with somebody on the phone. It's calling me for help, and they're not asking for help, and they're calling to bitch and to moan and all that stuff. And somehow, you know, all I've learned to do is gently shut them up and share with them. You know, as soon as they start, like, listening, as soon as they, you know, you get them calmed down, they're okay, you know. And stay on that phone an extra minute or that extra hour until you know. Until you know they're okay. You know, I hang the phone up, man, all I can do is just feel, just pure feeling. And you know, have a good cry and stuff, because, you know, that's what you guys, you know, through God, gave me, you know. And all we have to do is keep showing up. Thank you.